Okay, so good morning.
Good morning.
And September 15th, hey, September 15th, 2018, here at Narcisse, and we are in Numbers 25, and we'll be doing the first 9 verses. It's pretty short this morning. So that's interesting. And also, the Haftarah is Joel 4:18 and following in the Hebrew. In the English, it's Joel 3:18 and following. So let's pray to open. God, thank you for this morning, and thank you for each person here. Thank you that we're part of your body, your community of followers, the Jesus movement, and your kingdom of heaven. And we just ask that you would open up your book, your Bible, your word to us, and may it be fresh and new this morning, and that it would be as something we haven't heard before, because it's coming from you right now. And in Jesus' name, amen. So let's just start by reading these first 9 verses here. Jim, would you like to read it?
Now Israel remained in Shittim, Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Take all the leaders of the people and hang the offenders before the Lord out in the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel."
Moses said to the judges of Israel, "Every one of you kill his men who were joined to Baal of Peor." And indeed, one of the children of Israel came and presented to his brethren a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Now when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand.
He thrust his spear through both of them. And pursued the man from Israel right into the inner part of the tent, where he thrust his spear through both of them, the man from Israel and the woman through her stomach. Thus was the plague among the people of Israel stopped. Nevertheless, 24,000 died in the plague. 24,000.
That's it.
That's the end of the
section. That's the end of our section this morning. It's like got a powerful ending.
Very rare.
Yeah. Very to the point. So let's talk a little bit here about this story. We just finished a large section of a few chapters involving which famous character before this?
Balaam,
right? Balaam. And who summoned him?
Balak.
King of the Moabites. Balak's king of the Moabites. And what's the context there? Why does he want him to come there?
The
curse Israel. And then basically God tells him, no, you can't do it. And Balaam says, I can't do it either. And so if you look back at the end of 24 there, how does it end?
So Balaam rose and departed and returned to his place, and Balak also went his way. Or do you mean the verse before?
Right, no, that Balaam left.
They just pushed off.
And Balak went his own way.
We're talking about years
This is basically supposed to be before they enter into Israel. So. Right, yeah. Well, it even says where he went at, let's see.
I sort of lost track of time. You haven't gone into there, looked at the grapes, and the people hadn't spied out.
No, we have had the spies.
Okay.
Remember the spies were down in this area, Kadesh, and they came up from the north here through Hebron, and apparently they went all the way up close to into Syria. It's towards the end of the 40 years, right? Yeah. So, if...
Because it says in view of Moses, but he's not here.
No, he is.
Where does it...
Usually it says, and then Moses said, so... Okay.
Yeah, well, Moses says in verse, what, 4? 5. Yeah, so Moses is still saying stuff. But going back to what Sharon just said about... looking over when he's trying to do the blessings or the curses. If you look at Numbers 23 that we just came from, Numbers 23:28, what's it say there?
So Balaam took Balaam to the top of the hill that overlooks the wasteland.
Okay. And so when we come to our section here, verse 1 of Numbers 25, it says there in Shittim, but then in verse 3, it says they joined themselves to Baal Peor. So Peor is that mountain where they're looking down at this region here. And so obviously Baal Peor is their god of Peor that they joined themselves to. And who did they join themselves to besides Baal Peor? The women, right? the women of who?
Moab.
The Moabites, right? And so... Sorry? What are you asking?
Whether it talks about Midianites or just Moabite women.
Here it says the daughters of Moab, and then later on, when it's the example of that woman, that woman who... She's a Midianite.
Yeah.
Okay, that's another good question. What's a Midianite woman doing in the middle of Moabite woman? Or, I mean, lots of times people will say, well, these are two different stories and they got put together.
Where's Midian?
If you come, yeah, verse 6.
No, I don't mean where is it here?
Oh, the region.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're thinking of like Saudi Arabia, that area.
But didn't we do a whole thing about the way they sort of moved up? Midianites.
Well, they were kind of nomadic,
yeah. I mean, in a sense, everybody was nomadic back then. Whenever there's a drought or you run out of water, you got to be nomadic back then because they didn't have desalinization.
But it sounds like this one woman was a bit of an oddball out. I mean, it's not like all the Midianites were sort of moving up there because they wanted the water or whatever.
Well, I mean, later on, you know, we come to the story of Gideon, and who's invaded the land?
Midianites.
It's the Midianites.
Yeah.
So there is.
The Midianites are on the move.
There's movement.
Mm-hmm. There could be movement because there's a drought, or because it could become too populous.
Or what often happens if you like read history, like if you read like especially Europe, I just, you know, when there's a movement of one group of people, they push another group of people, and that group of people runs away from that people, and then they push into another people, and it's like a chain reaction of people pushing into other people because they're trying to survive. So who knows? We need Anson Rainey to answer that question. So,
it's
a lot of, could be, yeah.
What did you say, Ben?
It's not the refugee program now. I mean, what in a few years' time?
Right.
People are pushing.
People are pushing people out.
But it seems like you have an alliance this year, the United States.
Right. So, all right. Thank you for coming back to that. So if you look into the context of what we're reading about here, you'll notice that in Numbers 22, let's just go there. The Israelites traveled on, they camped in the plains of Moab. So this is what we're talking about here. And then Balak is calling, you know, he's going to call Bilam, and he's scared. And the Moabites are greatly afraid. In verse 4, Numbers 22, verse 4. So the Moabites said to the elders of Midian, "Now this mass of people will lick us up," and all of this. And so here it looks like they're in some type of alliance. Verse 7 of chapter 22. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the fee for the divination in their hands. So it definitely looks like an alliance between the two groups of people. And again, this is very common when you've got movement of people and you just kind of bind together to fight your common enemy. So, back to our thing in 25.
The Moabites were going to do the Midianites a blessing, if you like, by getting a curse put on Israel. It didn't succeed.
Right.
Because it's like, has joined together, and together we can get this curse with all the people and the good guys.
Strength in numbers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, where exactly does it say they're at here in chapter 25?
Acacia Grove.
Right. So, Shittim is a name, but then your Bible has made the translation in Acacia Grove.
Is that Acacia Grove's
right?
Translation.
So, does everybody know what a shita is? The tree I'm talking about here?
Yeah.
These grow throughout the desert, Sinai, Negev. Like, if you're driving down to the Dead Sea, you'll pass these. You know, they're not
everywhere.
They're the most prolific tree in the arid desert region. The shita. So shittim is plural, right?
Is an acacia?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is the most talked about tree in the Bible. Why?
Because it survives in the desert.
No.
It's all like tabernacle stuff, isn't it?
Yep. Everything that we've been reading the last 3 years, as we've been working through Exodus, we've been working. But
it's not like an oak tree.
Right.
You know what I think, actually? It's nice because it's light. You can carry it. Mm-hmm. And if you're adding gold on top, it's going to be very heavy. Mm-hmm. So you want the wood to provide structure to actually be quite light so that the gold then.
But the other.
It's not like a table or whatever. Like, there's just not that much.
The other point is there are no other trees out there. I mean,
right.
There's a couple, but these are. Yeah. Yeah, you have no.
If you don't use the acacia, you've got to share the seed as stack of Lebanon. Yeah. I mean, well, that's okay for your big beams, but when you want light stuff that you can, I mean, even a table, you know, let's have a table that's carryable.
So the point here is the tabernacle is entirely built out of it. The frame, the poles, the Ark of the Covenant, altar of incense, altar of burnt offering, they are all are framed and built with this tree. And so it's right here. It's across from the Jordan. It's across from Jericho. We've just kind of read a couple of verses there that gives you that context. And so, what is the big sin that's happening here? I'm repeating things and it's boring and all this, but I'm just trying to back pound something through here. What's happening here at these acacia trees?
They're bowing down to the gods of Baal, of Peor, and also they're screwing the women.
Okay, so there is... So, and you forgot one other thing. They're eating. They're eating. Yeah. And so, I bring all this up to say, what if there's something holy or something connected to these trees, this area, like it's a holy site, a high place. Because often you hear in the Bible, they'll go up to the trees and... And, you know, the ark is made of shittim, the tabernacle. The holy place of Israel is related to this tree as well. So what if this is something that's part of the whole ancient Near East culture, you know, at least in the desert regions? That's just one suggestion I'm throwing out there. Where does this scene, though, play out before? Uh-huh. Right? Where is that?
You mean the golden calf?
The golden calf. Exodus 32. It's interesting the way the text is put together here. And let's see. Exodus 32:6. The latter half of the verse there. It says, and the people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. And in Hebrew, it's Vayishev Ha'am Le'echol.
Exodus 32.
Yeah, 32:6. And the Vayishev Ha'am Le'echol, back in Numbers 25, it says Vayishev Yisrael Vashitim. It's the same. Sorry? Vayeshev, yeah. It's that little accent thing that's blocking it here. Sorry, Vayeshev. So anyways, but they both have that same verb, and they sat down to eat, to drink. In the Moabite story, they're not drinking, but it says then they're, as Jim put it, they're with the women. They're messing around. And here in Exodus 32:6, it says they rose up to play, letzachek. And this could be a euphemism for that same type of action.
Because it's what Isaac was doing with Rebecca when Pharaoh realized that they were married. Abimelech.
So. Yeah. And so this makes you think of... Well, we all know this, right? So we've always heard these stories. What, like, we'll get to this in a little bit. Eli, he has two sons. What are their names? The priest, Phineas and Hophni. And why are they bad? What are they doing? They're with the women and eating the food. They're taking the meat to eat. Because, you know, the whole point of having these sacrifices is actually it's a barbecue for most of your sacrifices. It's a barbecue. You do it, and then you all eat it together. So there's food connected, and there's, in the pagan tradition, there's sex involved, obviously. because it says that Phinehas' sons were with the women before the entrance of something into tabernacle.
It was understood as securing fertility.
Right.
That was part of the right.
You secure fertility for your land by reenacting fertility with the representative of the god.
Right, yeah.
So...
So they are sort of princesses of the god. They've got some sort of status, whether they like it or not.
It probably it depends probably on each of the different cults and how that works.
Probably a more celebrated role than just a run-of-the-mill prostitute.
Yeah.
And it probably denoted someone that was... I mean, they probably got someone who was...
We'll get to this in a second, actually, when we get to Joel, about how maybe it would have happened. I just want to end with this one point, though, about Paul, right? He comes to Jerusalem, Acts 15. They have the... I just skipped, 2,000 years? No, 1,000 years. And... What do they say when the Gentiles come into the Jewish faith? What do they need to do? Sexual morality. Blood. Things strangled. And meat sacrificed to idols. So, when Paul's all the time talking about this, you can eat meat sacrificed to idols, but then you cause your brother to stumble or whatever. But that issue of... part of the religious system is you eat. It's still there. You eat, and I guess also the sexual and stuff going on is also still prevalent. And so in the early church, the culture, it's like part of that culture that this is what's going to separate you from being with the Gentiles and a different type of Gentile that is not a part of that. And so you can see it going all the way back to Numbers 25, right? Because the Moabite women are Gentiles, and they're the ones bringing Israel into this relationship.
And it's so normal, but it says it's so normal in the culture for this to be the way it is. Like, you know, the only thing about the women that they clean and they do this.
Right, you can almost compartmentalize it as,
regular duty.
Yeah, like I need to have a mortgage on a house, and I need to have a retirement fund. I'm not saying all this is bad, but I'm saying there are things in our culture that we've accepted as these are normal, but they might have only been around 50 or 80 years or something, and culture changes, All the time things are changing, but it's easy to start to think this way of thinking is the normal. Yeah.
Israel's way of doing things is totally abnormal.
Yeah.
For the
culture.
World.
Yeah.
And everyone else, because all of the cultures around them are doing it this way.
Yeah.
Not just one of the cultures, all of them.
And the thing is Israel throughout its whole history struggles with doing all of that stuff as well. It's constant.
If it's taking form with his wives, it's not just because, foreigners are somehow terrible, but because by doing so, you will allow a foreign culture in, which involves this type of
lifestyle.
Which is what led to Solomon's
dream. Unfortunately, not only the earth, which is the same principle. I mean, people tend to Christianize it very much, because it's actually got much more complicated roots.
Mm-hmm. Do the women have any power
Well, I mean, that's, you know, there's these virgin ones that you hear about in the Greek culture.
Well, I think part of the problem is we have a lot of writings from the Greek world. I don't think we have so many writings from the Midianite and Moabite world.
Right.
We essentially don't have any. And so we're seeing it through the lens of the Bible, which doesn't really want you to talk about what they're doing, or they assume you know. And so it's really a guess. Yeah. But there is this lady mentioned in the text. She was obviously high up. They had some kind of special sanctuary thing. And someone connected it to some Arab, also in the same area thousands of years later. There was some kind of ritual that had the same, maybe a word similar to the that tent shrine that they were in.
Keva, or Kuba.
Tradition, if you think of, I don't know, European history, the way the kings or the crown princes, or they all had mistresses, it was all fairly, sometimes it was hush-hush, very often it was not. They set them up as princesses and whatever. How much of it was to do with political whatever arrangements, and how much it was just for sheer sexual pleasure, I don't know. But I mean, it went on throughout all history.
It's interesting here that where it says they began to commit sexual immorality, liznot, elvanot, moav. You know, we have the word zona for prostitute and.
You back now in numbers.
Numbers 25, yeah, verse 1. And the area of Shittim is, you know, right across from Jericho here. So, what does that mean? Remember Rahab, the prostitute in Jericho? It just made me think, you know, I don't know. It's in that, it's very close, very similar. And
they're very close to crossing over. I mean, like, it's like, you know, like, they have to be cleansed. I mean, this is really bad. And you're just about to go into the promised land, so this is not good.
Right.
Interesting that God used a prostitute. Warns against staying away from, and yet she is this woman with agency and is the one who is divinely appointed to bring about salvation. And, you know.
Well, right. Well, listen, it says Joshua, son of Nun, sent two spies out from Shittim, which we're talking about here, secretly, and instructed them, find out what you can about the land, especially Jericho. The very next verse says they stopped at the house of a prostitute. So it's very interesting. I don't know what to read into it. Because, you know, sometimes you go to bars or you go to these like shady places because that's where you're going to find information, right?
Yes,
if you're, where do you go to, like, you know?
And it tends to be a little more anonymous. People protect your identity.
Because everybody wants to be anonymous. Right, strangers, you would, right. So it wouldn't be so weird to have us to see a stranger.
So where's the verse
you just read? Joshua 2:1. So anyways, here again is Shittim, and here again is a little prostitution being mentioned. And we're going to come back to this actually very quickly. Any last things, comments about these nine verses, about this story? Anybody want
to? Later on in the New Testament, it says really that Balaam was responsible for this because he taught the Moabites how to infiltrate in this manner the Israelite people, even their weakness. And so this is really a result of what happened. But it's interesting, it doesn't mention it here, but in the New Testament,
actually, it does mention it. It's in Numbers 31, verse 16. 31:16.
Have you got the Revelation verse there?
Revelation's in chapter 3, I think. I can look it up in a little bit. Numbers 31:16 says, "Look, these people, through the counsel of Balaam, caused the Israelites to act treacherously against the Lord in the matter of Peor, which resulted in a plague among the community of the Lord." And this is mentioned actually quite a bit in the Old Testament, Hebrew Scriptures. Where is it? Maybe there's a few places, like in Psalms. They kind of talk about the whole story. But anyways.
To me, it's the juxtaposition. It's the failure of Balaam to get the people cursed, but by their own willingness.
He perfectly bring it on himself. So he succeeded. I mean, in a roundabout way.
Yes.
It's like in America, we call it, if you can't beat them, join them. And so that idea that it's not about throwing the frog in the boiling water. It's about slowly turning the water up so the frog doesn't realize it's boiling.
And well, so that they understood that God has a special protection over them. And the only way to break it, you can't break from the outside. You have to get the people on the inside to break it.
Yep.
So you have to be devious. And if you can kind of seduce them to step out of that protection, then you can get at them.
But it's also Israel's sin. I mean, that Israel knows that she's not been cursed. So we're okay, Jack. I'll do what I want to do. Yeah. I'll join the enemy. I mean,
or you just don't realize that you need to. That it is like for us. Yeah.
But I mean, what's clearer in the Numbers 31 passage is, again, it's much more to do with the purity of Israel. It's God's righteousness and him wanting a purity of people. And, you know, you kill all those from sin, but you leave the girls who are still virgins and so on and so on.
But the purity is connected. It's not just for the purity's sake. It's because the sexual immorality was actually pleasing God. It was worshiping. It was connected to fertility.
Yeah,
right?
It's connected to false worship.
It's not
yeah.
an issue of lust.
Yeah.
This is an issue of people going out and
worshiping.
Worshiping the way the other people did, mm-hmm. which is clearly wrong.
And it's like you're saying, like, you know, someone suggests, you know, I'd like to tear your marriage and your family apart. You know, of course you know, but that's how affair as an adultery
yeah.
starts. It starts not like that. It starts with, well, I'm just having a really nice conversation right now with this person, and it just
slowly,
it slowly erodes.
Insipid.
And like this, but you always read these scriptures, you're like, well, why are the Israelites so stupid? What are they all of a sudden worshiping other God? And it doesn't start like that. It starts with a famine. You're praying to God, but it's still not raining. And you're like, well, you know, okay, so we'll just...
Or, hey, you know, we're having this big party, this big barbecue. Why don't you join us?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get to know our neighbors, and we'll join your party.
If you look at Joshua 22:17, what's it say there?
It's not the iniquity of Peor and Nachash, from which we have not cleansed ourselves to this day, although a plague came on the congregation of the Lord, that you must turn away this day from following the Lord.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting that here in Joshua, and then you know the book of Judges is all the time talking about the struggle. Israel has a struggle. It has an addiction to other gods that it kind of fluctuates, goes back and forth depending on who the leader is or depending on if circumstances are going their way or if they're really bad, then they call out to God. And here, Joshua 22:17 is basically saying it's is still lingering with them to this very day. That's pretty haunting, pretty powerful to think about. There is the sin of Peor, and it's
but
going
isn't
back
that
to
true
this.
Still today?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Always the addiction to other gods. I mean.
Yeah.
In everybody's life.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple, basic, because now it's all, you know, money, power, all that stuff. But this is pretty direct. You know, like maybe they didn't have the same structures of money and power, protection.
So let's go to Joel 4 to finish up this morning with the Haftarah. And I want to read the whole chapter to get the context. So in English, it's Joel 3. Okay, I'm going to read here, Joel 3 in the English, Joel 4 in the Hebrew. For look, in those days, and at that time, I will return the exiles to Judah and Jerusalem. Then I will gather all the nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. So, what's the valley of Jehoshaphat? Valley of Judgment, like literally. And later on it talks about, I think, a Valley of Decision. What are we talking about here? What region or what city? If you keep reading on, it starts talking about Jerusalem. We haven't got there yet. But we're talking about Jerusalem here, and a lot of scholars think that this valley is the Kidron Valley, which is, you know, on the east side by the Temple Mount. And Eusebius, who was an early church father, 4th century, he was a great historian. A lot of the stuff that we know about this land today is from him. If his book, the Onomasticon, hadn't been saved over all these years, we would have lost a lot of information about the geography and the land and the places here. And anyways, in his view, he said the Valley of Jehoshaphat was the Hinnom Valley. So, but in general, we know that, like Jim has said, Valley of Judgment, just that it's a Valley of Judgment is what really matters. And so let's go on about who's being judged here. Yes.
They scattered
them. Yeah.
They cost lots of my people.
They traded a boy. Okay. I have here they traded a boy for a prostitute. What do you have?
Given a boy as payment for a harlot.
But really in Hebrew it's they gave a boy for a prostitute or as a prostitute. The girl was sold for wine, the little girl that they drank. And so this right here is, you know, this is a zonah again, the prostitute part. And it makes me think of going back to our story here in Moab and the whole question of do women have rights? Like, how do they become prostitutes? And we see here a lot of it is you are enslaved by people who conquer you, right? It's not your choice. And so this is interesting. So in this case, it's an Israelite or a Jewish prostitute. But back in our story with the Moabites, it was a Moabite, a Gentile prostitute. Verse 4. Why are you doing these things to me, Tyre and Sidon? Are you trying to get even with me, land of Philistia? I will very quickly repay you for what you have done. For you took my silver and my gold and brought my precious valuables to your own palaces. You sold Judeans and Jerusalemites to the Greeks, removing them far from their own country. Look, I am rousing them from that place to which you sold them. I will repay you for what you have done. So who's this judgment against? It's Gentiles, right? The nations. You got Tyre, Sidon. You got Canaanites. And so God's going to sell your children to the Sabians, which are basically Arabs. Verse 9, proclaim this among the nations. Prepare for a holy war. Call out the warriors. Let all these fighting men approach and attack. Now here's an interesting verse. Verse 10. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. What's wrong with this verse? Or what's...
It's the wrong way around.
It's the wrong way around. We normally think the opposite way. Where is that found?
Isaiah,
right? And that all of your weapons of war are going to be changed into peaceful instruments. But here it's the opposite. So it says they're going to beat plowshares into swords and pruning hooks into spears. Does that remind you of anything?
The spear that's just done in the Midianite baby.
Yes, yes. In Hebrew, the
is
word
that
is...
Really, is that
yeah,
really
yeah. It, yeah, well, there's it's still coming, but romach is the word here for spear, and it's the same thing of what Phineas used to kill the two of them in their act was a romach. And so it also makes you think, okay, on one hand you have peace coming, but Phineas or Pinchas has to convert that into like this instrument of judgment, just like we have here in Joel of, you know, if you're prostituting yourself and leaving God, there's a judgment involved. So anyways, there's an interesting connection there with romach, with spear, between Numbers 25 and Joel 3. Verse 11.
Romach.
Yeah. Yep. Verse 11. Lend your aid and come, all you surrounding nations, and gather yourselves to that place. Bring down, O Lord, your warriors. Let the nations be roused and let them go up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there I will sit in judgment. So there's the word for judgment with Jehoshaphat on all the surrounding nations. What?
It was also the first time, too.
Yeah. Rush forth with the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come stomp the grapes, for the winepress is full. The vats overflow. Indeed, their evil is great. Crowds, great crowds are in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and moon are darkened, the stars withhold their brightness. The Lord roars from Zion, from Jerusalem, his voice bellows out. The heavens and the earth shake, but the Lord is a refuge for his people. He is a stronghold for the citizens of Israel. You will be convinced that I, the Lord, am your God, dwelling on Zion, my holy mountain. Jerusalem will be holy, conquering armies will no longer pass through it. On that day, the mountains will drip with sweet wine. So here's a verse. If you look up on the board there, the mountains will drip with sweet wine. When you think of wine here, in this context, what are you thinking of?
So I want to.
It says the mountains are going to drip with sweet wine. It's Assis. What are you maybe thinking of? What we've just read here in Joel 3. Where is the wine connected to?
Blood.
Blood, right? It says that...
Stomping the grapes.
Stomping the grapes.
Well, that's a funny thing here. You have, let the weak say, I am strong. Like, we obviously quote that out of context. And then...
Well, there's another verse for
the harvest is plentiful. God the field in harvest because it's plentiful. You know, when I think of that, I tend to think of a different context completely. But here, it's in the context of a war.
Harvesting the dead.
Harvest, like, you cut off the head of the wheat and they fall. They're dead.
Yeah.
Like, your sickle is actually the grim reaper. You know, it's not...
I've lost you.
Joel 3:18. What do you have, Joel 3:18?
And it will come to pass in that day that the mountain shall drip with new wine.
Yeah, so that's it. That's all.
What I was using was Sharon.
The verses prior, it says. The context is
yeah,
war.
Verse 13. She went back to 10. That the weak say, I am strong. You know, we sing this in a completely different context.
Well, no. There's a different verse in Isaiah. It talks about let the weak say I'm strong. Yeah. So.
Well, just like the play on going from the prune hooks to war weapons, you have the reverse, going from war weapons to prune hooks. So all of these metaphors can be reused by people.
Right.
And in a shocking or just totally different context.
So the verse I was referring to with the wine is verse 13. Rush forth with the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come stomp the grapes, for the winepress is full. The vats overflow. And so if you go down to the verse that we have for today, verse 18, on that day the mountains will drip with sweet wine. It's the grape juice as it's starting to ferment into wine. And so there's a little bit, you could feel a little bit of this type of judgment, war, God's bringing on, you know, the grapes of wrath. In America, we have, what's that song called? My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling the vineyard where the grapes of wrath are stored. Right. That's Revelation, I think, right? And so, and then it says, the hills will flow with milk. All the dry stream beds of Judah will flow with water. And then it says, a spring will flow out from the temple of the Lord. And here's our main connection this morning. Watering the valley of acacia trees, or Shittim, which is where we started this morning. It's in Hebrew, Nachal HaShittim. And so it's probably not referring to our exact Shittim, which is across the Jordan, but somewhere here in Jerusalem, on this southeast side where acacias were growing at some point before we've become this metropolis, if you want to call it that. And but it's going back. It's alluding back to this whole story of these Moabite women.
And so, could it also be that it starts in Jerusalem and follows a Nahal that would lead somehow down to Shittim?
For sure. I mean, sure.
Because Nahals, they can go a long way.
Sure.
Either way, obviously, it can allude to the story where you're in Shittim.
Yeah.
And where does it say in Revelation that a river or a nachal will open up from the...
That's in Ezekiel. And Zechariah has like a fountain of coming out. But Ezekiel talks about that. The mountain will split and the water will come out of the temple
right.
And go down to the Dead Sea. Right.
So
Ezekiel 40.
So whether it's... But here it's linked with judgment. So, or if you can call it the last days or the final judgment.
Right.
I mean, it's the same when you come to Ezekiel then. It's also a future event.
Right. So.
Judgment or purification?
Or both. Sometimes I think things aren't black and white. It's not clear. Just like in life, you know, we always know there's like right and wrong, but there's always some things that are fuzzy that, especially if you raise kids, you start to realize what you think you're trying to say is right, but then you realize sometimes you have to give a little bit because it's not exactly... Everything doesn't quite fit like a jigsaw puzzle in every situation.
What you said, isn't it more not so much that deck, Gary? Because both and. It's both judgment and purification.
Right.
And that you can't have purification by very definition implies judgment. Some things are better than others.
That's true.
So it's a both and
mm-hmm.
rather than eating your words.
There's a lot of humble pie. I can give you a slice if you want. So how would y'all sum up this morning, Numbers 25, with our story with the Moabite women, these Gentile nations that Israel is starting to interact with before they come into the land, and with what's going on here in Joel, and if you want to call it the end times, or you want to call it kind of like final accounts of making things right, what things speak to you?
When I was reading it before, I kept thinking about God's righteousness and that judgment and purification were part of it. That's what I kept thinking, I think. And I think that's what I'm left with now.
Mm-hmm.
I think of sin having a season, but at the end, God will deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But in that first reading in Numbers, it was so fast, you know, it was kind of like judgment and 24,000
died.
So in one, how many months?
Right.
A short story.
What was also interesting in that, we didn't talk about it. It's concentrated. Mm-hmm.
I see a little leaven.
Right.
Spoils the whole one.
Yeah.
The whole loaf. It's interesting, Jennifer brought up the don't be immune to guilt.
Uh-huh.
Because in our text, Numbers 25, it specifically says Israel was yoked with Baal.
Mm-hmm.
So
Paul could be alluding back to that, Mary.
Yeah.
Sally? Yeah.
I see a parallel for Israel today with many, many attacks and the Lord's protection over those. But if Israel will agree to something that she shouldn't agree to, then there is that protection is not the same. If by her own hand she agrees to something, she can be hooked in, she can be tempted into a place that God doesn't want her to be.
Mm-hmm.
One could even say that going after other gods opens one up to attack. I mean, here it's a plague, but I mean, if we think of the numbers, I mean, she was saying about the vastness of the numbers. I mean, I kept thinking about the Shoah and the fact that we were really going after something else, a political head or a political something. We were abandoning God. And I don't just mean we, the Jews, I mean the world. And the consequence is vast numbers of dead. We're going to speak a bit about China, I think, today. I mean, it's just terrible when these things happen and you follow another God. The death rate is shocking.
Yeah. And the temptation for Israel today to be like the nations. Stand out. Yeah.
And that's a big, goes back to Balaam, who says very clearly, they're not like other nations. Mm-hmm. And Peter called his book A Place Among the Nations, and it was a complete rebellion right from the beginning. His first book is called A Place Among the Nations, and scripture says very clearly, you have not a place among the nations, you're separate.
Well, let's end with that, with the nations. If I could just take us back to Acts 15, to the nations, when they kind of were given a place at the table, you know, through Jesus, and most of us here are from the nations, and I think it's a good reminder, this story from Numbers 25, and that this is really what characterizes being Gentile. It's just commonplace. It's everywhere in the world. other gods, idolatry, and sexual immorality, which in a sense is still very much a part of our world, even if we don't use it in religious terms anymore. And but it still has a, it's a part of a worship experience, in a sense that people, you know, don't, I mean, God uses it often, like in Hosea and other prophets, to talk about his relationship with Israel is like a marriage. It's a sexual relationship. And so there is this idea that it's very intimate, this relationship. It's not something that's just a surface relationship. It's intimate, like with a man and a woman. And so for it's the same thing with the Gentiles, with us who are not part of Israel, and right, not in a physical sense, we're grafted in, and so I guess it all comes back to relationship. Like, how intimate is our relationship?
Can I ask one question in the Acts 15 thing? What is from things strangled?
It's a good question. There's lots of different interpretations of, because there's also different text variants of those words, and so one idea is that it's something related to idolatry, of how they would have killed the animal, strangling it. Do you remember other interpretations, or?
The
Samaritans.
And they were very proudly telling me how they kept kosher. Yeah. And there was a guy in the street, I was just up there, and he was happily wringing the neck of a chicken underneath, next to my car as I was passing by. And I thought, oh, that must be the kosher way of doing it. But it's not, because you have to let.
Well, you could kill it that way and then cover it down and drink the blood.
I see.
But doesn't all the blood come out because the heart's still pumping? Isn't there something to do with
that? That's like it. Do you want to go with it?
Possibly. Yeah.
But I just suddenly saw it and I
interesting though, in this context, in Psalm 106:28, when you tell with the historical psalm all these things, it says they worship Baal Peor, and they sacrifice is offered to the dead. But in Hebrew it says Zivhei Metim. I mean, sacrifices of
dead things.
And I wonder if it has to do with the way the sacrifices are done, keeping the blood in it. You know, if an animal just dies, you know, in sacrifice they pour it out in the blood, it's like different. Of course, it could also be ancestor worship. Like, it's not clear. It's just interesting, that context of idolatry being also how you treat the meat that you're sacrificing. There's a proper way to do a sacrifice, and if you don't do it that way, it's an abomination.
And one last thing to think about is Phineas. He's gotten this covenant of peace forever and all of this stuff, is the one who kills the two that are committing sexual immorality related to worship. But what do we find so many generations later? Another Phineas who's doing the opposite. And not that they're necessarily related. I mean, they are part of the priesthood line, but it's just interesting to think.
Who's the second one?
The son of Eli. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. That he's actually part of the cultic sexual monkey business. So he, it's just, it's kind of like a, I think, you know, a check to remind you. It's,
but it also, I mean, let's call him the good Phineas, our today's Phineas.
Right.
It just shows that his stand for God is total. And if you put it into a modern context, how often are we prepared to really say, this is absolutely wrong?
Right.
I mean, you know, sticking a knife in is
a statement.
Is a statement.
Shabbat Shalom.